Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for, I think of them as intelligence briefings on the war for the free world. It has many facets, this war for the free world, one of which is right here on the home front, protecting the free world's leader, and it is under assault in any number of ways. I am very pleased to have with us for a full hour conversation a woman who has amazingly found herself at the front lines of that part of the war for the free world that is about protecting this country from the untoward influences and perhaps even security threats arising from a refugee resettlement and asylum process that is seemingly being exploited by people who are not just coming here for freedom or opportunity of one kind or another, but who are coming here perhaps to, well, to coin a phrase, fundamentally transform our country. Her name is Anne Corcoran. She is the founder and the administrator of a marvelous online resource, Refugee Resettlement Watch. If you want to find it, go to Google and you'll find her readily accessible at Refugee Resettlement Watch. She is a woman with an advanced degree from Yale University. She is also just a regular person, a farmer, a housewife, and a political activist. And I am thrilled to be able to have a lengthy drill down with her on the very important work she's about. Anne Corcoran, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you so much, Frank, for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity.
Well, it's my pleasure, to say the least, because I think it's an opportunity that is much needed by people across this country who probably have, to some extent at least, an uneasy feeling about the kind of thing that you're working on and need desperately to know more about it. So first, maybe if you would, just tell us how you got into this work that you're doing at Refugee Resettlement Watch.
Well, it's an interesting story. In 2007, in the county where I live, Washington County, Maryland, it came to our attention here in the community that several hundred refugees had been resettled in Hagerstown, which is our county seat, by a Virginia church group, of all things. And we were astounded. At first, the things we noticed at first were things like the refugees weren't being very well cared for, and that's what brought the refugees to the attention of the local newspaper, which hadn't paid much attention up until that time, and to our citizens. And I just wanted to understand at the time what was the governmental process that allowed a church group, the Virginia Council of Churches, to bring what amounted to several hundred refugees, and a couple of hundred of them were Meskhetian Turks, which are Russian Muslims that were expelled from Turkey at one point, a complicated point in our history. And the local mosque was interested in working with the Meskhetians, and I was just concerned about what was happening, how they were coming here. So one thing led to another, and we had a large public meeting in our county to discuss how this came about, how the program came about. And to make a long story short, after the public meeting, the U.S. State Department shut the program down here, and Virginia Council of Churches essentially packed up and left, calling us an unwelcoming community. But because of that whole experience, I felt that the public, and just to educate myself too, I wanted to know how the refugee resettlement program worked on a national level.
And what did you find out as you began delving into this as a grassroots activist? First of all, how transparent was what is being done here? And who are the prime movers behind this operation, both at the governmental level and, well, contractors, I guess, like this Virginia Council of Churches outfit?
Yeah, it was incredibly secretive. And that's what I have found out. I have spent 7 years trying to unravel the program, but they make it extremely hard. And Let me just give you a little background on the Refugee Resettlement Act, and we'll come back to that. The Refugee Resettlement Act created this program that we operate under now in 1980, and Senator Ted Kennedy and Joe Biden were chief sponsors of it in the Senate. It passed the Senate by a vote of 85-0, by the way. And it set up this system of supposed public-private partnerships with nine major, I call them contractors, major nonprofit organizations that now receive as much as 99% of their funding, in some cases, from the federal government. The UN brings, it tells the U.S. State Department which refugees we should resettle and from where. In most cases, there are a few exceptions. The U.S. State Department then contracts these nine agencies. Six are religious charities, or so they like to claim, but they are really just contractors of the federal government now, and they use very, very small amounts, I mean, of their own personal money. An example is the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, whose migration fund is 97% funded by federal taxpayer dollars. Those nine are then broken up into, they have 350 or so subcontractors working for the nine in 180 cities in the United States. So the refugee comes into the country, the State Department admits them, and they are divvied up in a competition almost between all of these subcontractors across the country. And that's how Virginia Catholic Churches came to be in Washington County, Maryland, as a subcontractor of the major contractor of Church World Service.
So what you're describing here really is a cottage industry that has been spawned by this legislation and is giving rise to really a powerful interest group, really, that would be pushing hard to have more of these refugees brought in because it is a source of funding for their organization, not simply some humanitarian concern. Is that right?
Absolutely. These contractors are literally paid by the head to resettle the refugees. There is absolutely no incentive to ever slow the flow. You can imagine, you've set up an office in a county like Washington County, Maryland. You've got staff, you've got rent to pay. You have to be bringing refugees in. And by the way, once they get the seed community established, which is what they call it themselves, the seed community, the contractors are paid by the head to bring the family members, to do the paperwork to bring the family members over. So it's a self-perpetuating process. And to make it even further galling is that these nine actually lobby on Capitol Hill for all sorts of immigration issues, including the so-called Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill. All of these nine lobbied for that bill.
Let's mention them by name. And again, our guest is Ann Corcoran with Refugee Resettlement Watch, an organization that she has founded that is one of the few really monitoring what's going on here and making it her information available to the rest of us, which is an extraordinarily important service. Church World Service. You walk through it, if you would. You're much more familiar with it.
Yeah. Let me give you the six that are what we'll call religious charities, if you will. The six religious are the largest of the six is the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, and I say largest in terms of the number of refugees they resettle in America. The Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service is gaining on the bishops. They're rising. We have the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, Church World Service, Episcopal Migration Ministries, and World Relief, which is an evangelical organization, supposedly. The other three include the International Rescue Committee, which is actually financially the largest, and headed by David Miliband, the former British Foreign Secretary. You can see where they're headed. And then there's ECDC, which is the Ethiopian Community Development Council. And then the third of the secular is the U.S. Committee for Refugees and Immigrants, and that's the short for USCRI. And that is headed by a woman named Lavinia Lyman, who was Bill Clinton's director of the Office of Refugee Resettlement. So you can see this revolving door of she was first in the Clinton administration, then she comes out and she is now working for an agency that receives federal funds from the same office she once headed.
Once administered. We're going to have to pause for just a moment in an hour-long discussion with Ann Corcoran of how this process that she's just described involving a kind of collusive arrangement, if you will, between the federal government on the one hand guided, directed, essentially dictated to by the United Nations on who will be a refugee and what will be done with them, then turns over the process of putting them into communities ready or not to administer and care for these refugees. This is a conversation that everyone in America ought to be having and learning from Ann Corcoran about, and we'll do more of that right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.